One of the really helpful supports for continuity is a curiosity about where awareness gets lost. Where does the mindfulness slip out? This might happen in certain activities that you do, maybe your yogi jobs or places you go, going into your rooms, or particular mind states. It might be some habits of mind with particular mind states to get lost. Not that it's necessary to get lost, but just your habit of mind to get lost in particular mind states. And so it can be really interesting to kind of just like check through the day. What are the places, what are the times that the mindfulness slips out? And then what I like to encourage in those things, when you kind of, you know, take the inventory and then recognize, okay, well, I tend to get lost midway through the meal. Or I'm really mindful as I'm in that dining room line, and as soon as I hit the table, it's gone. So just kind of getting curious about that, rather than thinking, okay, so I know that I'm getting lost there, rather than like trying to muscle your way through it and say, okay, I'm going to get lost here, so I'm going to be mindful, I'm going to hold on to mindfulness. Be curious about what happens there. You know, what goes on in that moment, in those moments, in those places, in those times, connected to that mind state. And so it's almost like being willing to let our mindfulness slip, but kind of like pick up, oh, that's what happens there, you know, in the line. Oh, judging is what happens. And the mind gets caught in the thoughts of judging. Or going into our rooms, it's just almost like almost a willful, oh, I can let go now. Like, doesn't count in here. Nobody's looking. So, you know, noticing what the beliefs are, what's going on. So curiosity about it. And then as you notice something there, you might notice something, be aware of that. Oh, judging is happening. Or a feeling of, phew, doesn't count now. Oh, what's that like? Maybe it's actually the mind kind of relaxing in that moment. And maybe you can be aware of that relaxing. I actually find that as the mind relaxes, it is a place where the mindfulness can slip out, and we can kind of, you know, touch in, attune to that relaxation. And then it can be like really pleasant to connect with that. Connect with that release, relaxation. Another very common thing to be curious about in where the mindfulness gets lost is, this is getting familiar with something a little subtler in the mind, but I would say many, many times the mindfulness gets lost when the attention shifts to something and we're unaware that the attention shifts. So you might be sitting here and just noticing certain aspects of your experience, you know, aware of just the body sensation and the feeling in the room, and, you know, kind of aware more generally, but almost like not completely aware of sound, for instance. And then maybe a strong sound happens and the attention shifts to that sound, but we don't really notice that shift. And when the attention shifts, it's like some perception, some experience, some interest in the mind that, oh, I want to pay attention to that. But we're kind of in the mode of like, oh, I'm attending to these things. It's almost like we're looking at a particular area and some experience has happened outside of that area. And so we don't notice that it shifted. And so that is often a place where mindfulness gets lost, is when the attention shifts and we haven't noticed the attention shifting. And so to be curious about this shift of attention, one really helpful place to start to get familiar with this shift of attention, we've already mentioned a little bit, in the walking practice in particular is when the attention shifts from seeing to looking, or from looking to looking to looking to looking at different things. So when there's a kind of a shift from of the interest and the, you know, where the mind kind of lands, there's a kind of a sense or an experience of that shift of attention. Seeing to looking. You know, seeing can be much more receptive, stepped back. We're not really looking at anything, but then something will happen. There'll be a movement or a splotch of color that pops into view, and our attention orients. Very natural for this to happen. We don't have to make it not happen or try to stop it happening to somehow stay in this more receptive seeing. It's like, this is what the mind does. It will attend. This is a natural part of our organism, that it shifts to seeing, from seeing to looking at times. And so getting familiar with that experience, what it's like, oh, interest, the mind kind of goes to that as a kind of a quality of the mind that picks up on something and shifts. When we can get familiar with that experience, it can support us in other ways. We can get familiar with it in the field of hearing as well, the shift from hearing to listening. You know, maybe we're just walking and taking in the ambient sound and more generally, you know, just taking in experience. And then there's the sound of the woodpecker. Whew, the attention goes there. Noticing that shift. We don't have to make it not happen, but notice that quality of the shift of attention. As we get familiar with that, and if we don't notice that shift of attention, we'll start thinking about woodpeckers. What kind of a woodpecker is that? Is it the one with the red head? Did I hear it laughing before? And there we're gone. We're lost. So that shift of attention, really helpful to get familiar with. And then in the sitting, too, we can start to notice that, the quality, as we get familiar with the quality of the attentional shift, what that's like, what that feels like. Then in the sitting practice, we can also begin to notice this. Like, we're sitting there and the something happens. Somebody coughs or sneezes and the attention goes there. That's what's happening. Just notice the attentional shift. If we're not noticing it, we may get lost in the thought, the story of that person, why they're coughing, what's going on. So noticing the attentional shift is a real support for the continuity. And then the other piece I'll mention just briefly is it can be really helpful as the days progress, as the mind gains some momentum. Sometimes it might feel like we're working hard and it's like, I don't know, it feels like we're trying hard to be mindful and it doesn't seem to be working very well. Sometimes what I see is actually as the days progress, we kind of like build up a habit of how we make the effort. Oh, am I aware? What am I aware of? And then we kind of get in that groove of that particular form of effort. But it's a little bit too much. And so sometimes paradoxically, if it feels like the mind is like the losing continuity after a period where it's felt like it's pretty continuous, sometimes backing off of the effort is helpful. Because the level of activity in the mind to do the effort sometimes is actually more than is necessary. You know, if we're riding a scooter, you know, we tap on the ground to get the scooter going. Not the motorized ones, the ones that you have to kick to get going. You tap on the ground. And at first you have to tap to get the scooter going. But after a while, you can just ride. And if you put your foot down to try to keep it going, you know, it's like it might actually get in the way for a little while. And then when you notice the scooter starts getting wobbly or slowing down, then you can put your foot down. So it's kind of like a tuning to that momentum. And sometimes backing off of the effort is exactly what's called for. So I play with that at times. How little effort do I need to be mindful? It's actually a lot less than we think sometimes, because it is such a light touch, such a light touch. So we had on the schedule, we had listed 3 full days for the schedule of sitting, walking, before shifting to the more open schedule. But we had a conversation and decided to shift today. So, surprise. Many of you are familiar with this shift. You've done these retreats before, but I want to say a few words about the schedule changes, how this works, and some things to play with, to explore. So basically, we will still have the early morning bell ringer, the 6 a.m. bell ringer. So that sitting, we'll have a couple of sittings together in the hall, and that's one of them that will have a structure to it. The before breakfast bell, the bell at the end of that sitting, and then the Sangha service. And so that stays structured, the breakfast time stays structured, the yogi jobs, keep doing your yogi jobs. Sometimes when we get into the open schedule, the mid-morning jobs, people might forget. So, you know, because it's been structured to the schedule. So I just want to highlight that for you, to remember your yogi job times. So the morning schedule through this sitting is the same. We will all gather together for this sitting, and there'll be the end of this sitting at 9:30. And then from the period from 9:30 through to the lunch bell, and the person who was signed up for that noon bell ringing, who was that person? Okay, so you start that today. So there won't be a bell in here in the hall at the end of the sitting, or at the end of any sitting. So between 9:30 and 12:15, it will be an open schedule in the hall. There's not going to be practice leaders. There don't need to be outside bells. So anybody who signed up to be a bell ringer for these sit walk periods, you no longer have to do that. So the outside bell, Joe will ring the bell to kind of call us, to alert us that lunch is ready, because we do have to stay on a schedule for our meals and things. And so the lunch will happen at 12:15, the yogi jobs following that. But basically, aside from the early morning sitting, the 8:30 sitting here, the 4 o'clock sitting in the afternoon, and the 9 o'clock, the 4 o'clock Dharma offering, and the 9 o'clock offering in the evening, the schedule is open. There's no structure to the sitting and walking. And so you are welcome to come into the hall, sit as long as it works for you, and to get up and leave when it works for you. So this is an encouragement to really get curious about what supports you, to look at the wisdom. Anna last night asked that question, what's the most wise thing to do right now? You know, is it to continue sitting? Maybe as you're sitting for a while, there's kind of the habits like, oh, it's been about 45 minutes, it's time to get up. Well, look at that. Is that the wise thing to do, get up right now? What feels appropriate? What feels compassionate? What feels wise? And so it's, you know, to look at the mind. What happens when you decide to get up? What's deciding that? And there can be some really good reasons to get up, like a full bladder. And there can be some kind of more habitual reasons to get up. Or maybe what happens is you're sitting there and you have a thought of a cup of coffee. And then, you know, you're getting up and walking out of the hall and heading to the dining room without even really aware that you had that thought. So we'd really like to encourage you to notice when you shift, or when the intention arises, essentially, when the mind kind of goes, oh, it's time to stop doing this, I'm going to do that. And get curious about it. Why? What's the motivation? You know, look at your mind. And so this gives an opportunity for you to find your own rhythm, your own, what's supportive for your practice. It's not the same for everyone. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with this, just a few suggestions, you know, that you could, for if you're unfamiliar with this and it kind of feels like, oh, how do I decide? You know, you could just set yourself a schedule. That's fine. Just use the schedule that we've had and just to start to kind of get yourself going, so you don't have to worry about it or think about it. And then let yourself start to get curious about in that moment when you're deciding to get up. Maybe I can sit a little longer, or when walking, you know. Maybe the momentum of the mindfulness seems strong right now. So continue this. That's often an interesting place to check into. What is supporting the continuity? What is supporting this ease of mindfulness? If you're sitting and it feels like, yeah, I can keep sitting. I'm going to keep sitting. I'm going to sit for 2 hours. That kind of mind may not be the kind of wisdom mind that is supportive. It may be more like I'm going to hold myself here and it doesn't matter how painful it is. So that's the mind of greed, perhaps. You know, try to look a certain way or log a certain time, something like that. So you might set yourself a schedule. Another approach might be, this is one that I've liked to play with, is just sit down and, you know, for the sitting or for the walking, whatever you're doing, and when notice the intention or notice the kind of urge to get up, the urge to shift to the other kind of posture. So I'm sitting and, oh, it's time to get up. Or that thought of the cup of tea arises. Oh, time to go get tea. Notice that urge. Notice everything that's going with it, the feeling of the wanting, the pull, the kind of direction of where your mind is going. Notice that. Let that urge pass. It will probably pass more quickly than you might think. So just play with it. Let it pass. And then see what happens on the other side. Maybe another urge comes quickly, or maybe it's another 10 minutes. The second urge comes. Let that one arise and pass too. Watch the urge. Watch the motivation. The third urge comes. Let yourself follow through on that. So that you know that you're not stuck forever, you know, but give yourself the possibility of sitting through those urges and seeing what's going on there. So for some people, this will be a relief and like, yay, we're finally here with this unstructured schedule. That tends to happen the more we do this style of practice. For those of you who are unfamiliar with it, again, there may be some aversion arising. There will be a little more activity in the hall. You know, you're sitting, there's people coming in, there's people leaving, there's a little more rustling going on. So aversion may happen. So notice the aversion. Notice what the idea, what the beliefs are around that. Is there some belief that I can't meditate when there's a rustling going on? What about being aware of the rustling? Just noticing what's there. So noticing the aversion, we can get attached to the noise, attached to the quiet sometimes, but we can also just open to what is. These are the conditions now. Can we be with that? there anything more to add here? We don't have a lot of time, but anything I've missed, like major thing I've missed? Okay. So just to remind you, the people who ring the 6 a.m. Oh, actually, we need a 6 a.m. bell ringer. Is anybody willing to do the bell ringing for the 6 o'clock sitting in the morning and the practice leader for the sitting to ring at 6:40? Thank you, Joe. And please see the managers to train about that one, because it's a little different than the other bell ringing. So that sitting continues. The bell ringing for the 8:30 sitting continues. We'll have the new bell for the lunchtime. The person who rings the bell for the Dharma offering at 4 o'clock, please continue to do that. And the person who rings the bell for the 9 o'clock sitting, please do that. Yeah. Oh, and the dinner bell. Is there somebody already doing that? Okay, great. So continue that one too. So if you have a question about whether you need to ring your bell, ask the managers. So enjoy the adventure.